And welcome to the Grant Street Experience. I'm your host, Grant Irvin. Welcome to our fun little podcast about all things interesting that happen along Grant Street. Have with me my co-host, Rebecca Kiernan. Rebecca, good morning.
Morning.
And our fabulous guest today, Janine Zappa. Janine, welcome. How are you?
I'm great, Grant. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, good to see you. Welcome to the Grant Street Experience, where we cover all the fun and interesting things that are happening along Grant Street. We're really excited to have you here today on the show and talk about all things energy efficiency. We haven't had an energy efficiency guru like yourself on the show yet, so we're looking to dive into some really interesting topics. Maybe for our listeners, just to start off, if you can share a little bit about your background and how you got into kind of the work around energy efficiency that you've been working on for a good portion of your career now, I think, from what I've known.
It is. It's a definite pivot. I started in the for-profit world years ago in technology and then shifted because I was really interested in these issues and started out kind of poking around sustainability. I worked at one point at the Green Building Alliance for about 5 years, became Allegheny County's first sustainability manager. I went on from there to lead Conservation Consultants, Inc., a local nonprofit that focused on residential energy efficiency for 7 years until we merged this past summer with Rebuilding Together Pittsburgh, who is now taking on the mantle of ensuring that that residential energy efficiency work happens at a local level. I myself have now joined the Keystone Energy Efficiency Alliance, which is a statewide trade association that focuses on policy issues, helping to ensure a bigger market and entire value chain for energy efficiency in the Commonwealth.
That's terrific. So you've had the experience of being at all the levels, right? Now you've done local, county, in building, and now at the state level. Do you have some reflections in terms of just the differences between working at those different scales?
I think I'm so new at the state that I can't offer you a really good perspective there, although it's a really exciting opportunity to see how policy initiatives like the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative mm-hmm. that is currently moving through the PA House and Senate in terms of being implemented in the DEP can really create a market mechanism that allows for carbon reduction at electric generation plants. And so it will, over time, as it has done in 10 other states where it's operated for the past decade, really push us toward more clean energy generation and reducing carbon, right? So there's room for everybody in that model. But what it does is let the market decide what the value of that is. And it's been pretty clear elsewhere that that has driven a lot of innovation and creates an investment mechanism for energy efficiency. There's been billions of dollars, $3 billion raised over the 10 years that that program has been implemented by the way the program works. So we're expecting $300 million in Pennsylvania the first year, and wow. almost half of that should go to energy efficiency.
This is, I mean, the REGI program is just a huge opportunity. I mean, when that $300 million comes, what are some of the types of projects that might yield benefit from it?
It's not if, Grant, it's when.
When. All right. We're being positive.
We're going to be positive here.
I work at the state level too. That's why I'm a little bit more reserved.
So. I suspect that you are. That's manifested itself in a number of different kinds of programs in the states that participate, some of which are rebates, some of which are energy audits available to consumers at all income levels. There are sometimes special programs for those who are income challenged that might provide, much like many of the energy efficiency programs you see right now, that might do an assessment up front, provide free appliance replacement or weatherization of that home. There can be improvements at commercial buildings, whether that's an HVAC system that's more efficient or looking at even larger projects like a district energy system, right? Mm. So it really depends on what becomes allowed. And the DEP right now is working in Pennsylvania starting last week on determining what the program parameters will be in Pennsylvania. So I think right now it's a question mark, but certainly we expect there to be a fair amount of proven energy efficiency opportunities in that mix. And there's some other things that go in there too. There's some just transition that is expected to help people who work in traditional energy generation fields to be able to migrate their careers and still have good wage and employment, right? Because that's important, right? As we shift our economy.
Right. Yeah, it's so important that there's, you know, we're not just thinking about, you know, kind of supporting innovation, but also supporting that transition is really critical in both urban and rural communities. One of the things I wanted to jump into, you know, while we had you here is the topic of energy burden.
Sure.
And maybe Rebecca, just to start off, we've done some work in the city on the topic of energy burden. And maybe if you could just introduce the issue a little bit and some of the work that we've done here in the city around the topic. And what is it? What is energy burden?
Yeah. Energy burden is the amount of, so it's the amount of income at the household level that is then spent on your utility bill. I guess there's utility bills, which includes water. So some counts include water, although most don't, but this is for energy. So heating and cooling. You know, the work that we've done mostly came through a Bloomberg grant that we received, which we actually partnered with CCI and Janine on a couple years ago. In Pittsburgh, there's been a number of studies that have come out. A lot of them, the best ones come from the ACEEE, the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy. Mm-hmm. But some of the digging that we did looked at, you know, Pittsburgh's energy burden count. So we're the sixth worst city for energy burden at the time of the last report that was out. Second worst actually for our Black residents nationwide. So we started looking at, you know, what are the reasons for that? Actually in Pittsburgh, we pay some of the lowest energy rates in the nation, which led us to believe, you know, while we were doing this digging and we knew that energy burden was a problem, we realized that that's probably got a lot to do with energy efficiency. Which is why we partnered with CCI and worked with Janine. You know, Janine can talk about some of the issues and challenges with our housing stock in Pittsburgh too.
Yeah. Maybe Janine, you want to dive into them. You've seen a lot of these houses firsthand from your time at CCI. I mean, what is that process and some of the things that you've seen in the individual residential households that are such a challenge?
Sure. It's a great question. So I think as you and Rebecca know, and I'm not going to give you the correct stat now, but there's a significant portion of City of Pittsburgh housing stock that was built pre-1956 even, and much of it pre-1978. And while we've got all kinds of great new development going on, there really wasn't anything in the building code requiring energy efficiency until 1978.
Wow.
So a lot of this older housing stock, is not built in the same way that stuff that's built today is. So from out of the gate, you may not get the same performance, and it's going to cost you more to heat or cool that home because it's leakier. I mean, that's it in a nutshell, right? And unfortunately, we also, you know, we've got this perfect storm here of having steep slopes, lots of clay soil, lots of houses built on a slope, and really kind of quirky, heavy initial rainfall events. And I mention this because most of the foundation walls that were built pre-1978 didn't even have what you normally see today is, you know, kind of a weather sealing, almost like a tar on the outside of that cinder block or that sandstone, and then some gravel. And that's intended to allow drainage around your foundation of your house when there's rainfall. And even just moisture that is in the soil at a molecular level. You know, while there are a large portion of homes that have moisture in the basement, usually it's not, you know, what we in the trade would call bulk water, right? It's not like you're getting a puddle in there unless it's a super heavy rain.
Right.
But at a molecular level, that moisture is coming in. And so a lot of people have really high humidity in their basement because part of it's below grade, you know, below the dirt line, because the house is on a slope. So all these things combine in this perfect storm to mean that we've got a lot of moisture in homes. And why I mention that is it makes it really tricky and creates a lot of deterioration in homes. Moisture is like the number one root of evil in a house. It'll cause rot, it'll cause pests, it causes unhealthy indoor air quality. So moisture and energy efficiency, while they are two different things, are intrinsically linked. Mm-hmm. In a house, you want to make sure you're addressing moisture issues before you're tightening up that house, so that clearly you're not exacerbating any indoor existing air quality issues, or just simply propagating a mess, right?
Yeah.
So it's an interesting conundrum, right? But the housing stock, as it deteriorates, and if people are not able to maintain it, and the real challenge with a high energy burden is we're talking about people, as Rebecca noted, all right, our lower income residents suffer a lot more. That is why the national attention has been focused on this work, and cities like Pittsburgh that have traditionally been in the top 10, that low income residents are typically spending 2 to 3 times and nationally 3 times as much wow. as non-low income residents on their energy bills, right? Not dollars wise, but as a percentage of their household income. So if you're thinking about a person who is extremely poor, you know, less than $20,000 a year household income, that's a really big hit to have 7-8% of your income versus 3.1 or 3.5, which is around the national average. So to double that is a pretty big deal. And, you know, you've got to carve up a big chunk of that small pie. So now if you can't do basic repairs, that house just further deteriorates, right? That's a really long answer. I'm sorry, Grant.
No, I think it's a complex issue, right?
It's a
complex issue. And one of the things, Rebecca, too, that we found in the equity indicators, maybe if you touch on this, though, is, you know, what Janine's laying out is like some of those upfront challenges that we see because of energy burden. But there's also, you know, corollary issues with health and stress. I mean, what were some of the things that the connection points that you saw with that?
Yeah, there's a lot of health disparity in health outcomes too. And, you know, it could be causal. Anecdotally, we know that it's a challenge, but you know, there's a higher asthma rate. There are a number of disparities that are a result of poor living conditions.
Janine, one of the things, you know, you guys partnered on this, but, and I'm proof positive. I call it the Zappa project here in my house. The role and importance of an energy audit. I mean, can you talk about a little bit about that process? And a lot of folks, myself included, kind of, you know, come into it with a lot of trepidation. But it's probably, you know, some of the best money that you could spend if you're a homeowner or a property owner, in terms of like just giving yourself like the to-do list, right?
Oh, Grant, I'm going to give you a COVID hug for that. Thank you. That's great. You know how I feel about energy audits, right? And I had one long before I worked at CCI, when I was still at the county, when I bought the house I'm currently in, and it's invaluable. I think you've described it perfectly. It is, you know, people are reluctant, right? Because they think, oh, I've already spent money on a home inspection. Why do I need an energy audit? Well, you know, to be clear, your home inspection, you know, while useful, does not generally touch on a number of the things that an energy audit will cover. It's a couple hour assessment in your home done by somebody who has a particular credential that they've had to go through a bit of training, and they bring in special diagnostic equipment. Okay. So in this energy audit, they set up kind of a fabric fake front door that has a giant fan in it and create essentially a 20 mile per hour wind in your house. And why they do that is it helps to identify exactly where the air is leaking in your house.
The blower door test, right?
That's right. The blower door test. And so that helps us to know, you know, how many air changes per hour. And you want some fresh air, but your ventilation systems should be providing that, not your walls and the gaps around your windows. And, you know, we find that typically houses in this region are a lot leakier. Through the project that you mentioned, Lucy DeBarbaro at Rebuilding Together Pittsburgh had done some compilations and found, and even contacted the folks who run the National Home Energy Score at the Department of Energy, and found that Pittsburgh's data showed that the houses here were significantly leakier than anywhere else that they had done home energy scores. And that's 100,000 plus scores done across the country, right? So for whatever reason, Grant, and I can speculate why the houses are leakier, but there's an opportunity in an energy audit to identify, all right, exactly where do I need to put caulking? Exactly where do I need to fix a door? Exactly where do I need weather stripping? Where am I missing insulation? If, you know, somebody's using an infrared camera, you'd be shocked at how many times a crew gets interrupted and they don't fill a certain bay in your walls with insulation. So where you think you have it, you may not. Where you've been told you have it, you may not. Or you just simply may not. There's a lot of what's called brick and tile construction around here, and that doesn't allow any room for insulation. So you have to kind of add it inward. So the audit creates your roadmap of what needs to be done. And I so appreciate you participating in, you know, the project to help see what happens. And I'm delighted to hear you got something of value, because now you as a homeowner, right, you can tackle it one thing at a time. It doesn't mean you have to spend a fortune up front, but you've got a prioritized list and also prioritized ROI of what's going to make the biggest impact. Right.
It just a quick anecdote. With the infrared test, the only place that we had insulation was an interior wall in our attic. for some reason, there's nothing there. There's nothing there. And then I have walking up to my attic, the top floor. There's an interior wall on the stairwell, and it had insulation in it. And it was the only wall that had insulation. The only wall that didn't need it.
You got it. Exactly. Right. You're in an unconditioned space, not on the exterior of the house. Not really going to do you a lot of good, but that's nice that you had it there, Grant. That's great. Yeah. Doing no good whatsoever.
Yeah. I could huddle behind it in the winter. I think that was like the purpose of it.
So what are the first projects that you did after you got the energy audit?
So just to kind of follow suit with like what Jenny was talking about with moisture. They'll walk into the house and they have all your equipment and everything. And, the funny part of the story is like my wife is like the project manager, right? And so she's sweating the whole thing, like understanding like what we're getting into. And we started in the basement, did the walk through the house, and it basically is followed. The project management plan has followed the same steps that the energy auditors took. So we began in our basement. Which going back to buying our house in the very early days has always been about water management. So I installed a French drain and sidewalks and lost a couple of friends over the project, not because of the concrete, but just because of the intensity of the project, and calling on friends to help out. But we started on interior water management. Which has been a huge improvement, to your point, in terms of the reduction of moisture in the basement. And then we kind of worked our way up. The one challenge I will say is it is a domino effect, right? So like to be truthful and honest, like once you open up a wall cavity, you start to see all these other issues really that I would kind of attribute to poor construction, but just what we've learned in construction management over the last 100 years. So for example, in order to get insulation, we had to get all new electrical because we had knob, we had knob and tube wiring, which our home inspection said was already taken care of, but it was not.
Oh, how interesting. Yeah.
So then we did insulation then prompted that we do siding. Siding also prompted that we had to do a new addition on the back, there's a whole sorts of things, but the end result, and we'll see it this winter. We started to see it at the tail end of last year is our heating bill in February, March of last year was down about $400.
That's phenomenal.
So it was a significant reduction.
Yep.
And it's to that point, just like it follows suit with all of the research that we have, is that we're basically consuming more gas, electric gas mostly, to heat and cool our homes, and that we don't need to if we're properly insulated and maintained.
That's right. You know, Grant, I had a similar experience after I had my energy audit. You know, we were here the first winter before we insulated, and I think my gas bill in January was like $470, right? Uh-huh. And then the next year was the polar vortex, if you remember that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We were under $150 in January. And wow. I was thrilled, wow. Right? So, and it's really demonstrated that, particularly in low-income housing, I do want to make mention, I know we don't have a ton of time, but as Rebecca noted, the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, often called ACEEE, always puts out a report on high energy burden. They just this week held a webinar and last week just published their latest version. Now, sadly, they don't note Pittsburgh in it because it wasn't part of the data set. However, that data set's being updated, and later this fall, they are going to publish an updated version. But that report shows that in low-income housing, weatherization is shown to reduce energy usage by 25%. 25%, yeah. Right? If I told you you can go on a diet for 2 weeks and lose 25% of your weight, everybody would sign up. But here we are with our houses, probably the most expensive thing you own, and yep. You've got no clue about it. And to your point, Grant, there's a lot of stuff that we just don't know. It's not visible. And many of the opportunities and challenges related to energy efficiency are not in plain view. Some are, though, by the way. So here's my tip for a really simple thing you can do now that we're in the autumn season and it's actually colder instead of this crazy hot summer that we've had, is just go look for spider webs in your basement.
Hmm.
And anywhere there's a spider web, that's an indication that there's an air current because they like to build their webs where that air is flowing. And so you probably have some air sealing to do. And I can't hammer on this enough. Air sealing is the bookend yep. to insulation. You know, it's like going outside with that nice knobby sweater and the wind is blowing and the wind blows right through it. You need the windbreaker too. They go hand in hand.
And this is the foam that they inject?
That's right.
Yeah.
So you can have spray foam, caulking, anything that blocks flow of air is a good solution to air sealing. But generally, right, you're looking at some kind of expanded polystyrene, rigid board, or sprayed foam, or caulking. Many things you can do yourself as a resident, right?
Yeah. Just to pick up on that, because we've got some limited time here, I wanted to ask you about this is, you just mentioned that 25% number, which is so significant. And what are some of the things that you've seen or heard through this period of the pandemic? As folks have, moved, spent more time in their homes, working from home, that's one part of it. But the other is, as we think about kind of economic stimulus or the opportunities in terms that weatherization can provide, in terms of economic recovery, has Kia or other folks given some thought to that or you personally?
Sure. So at a state level, right, Kia and a number of other organizations, right, are really advocating to see the cap lifted on the current energy efficiency program in our state, Act 129. Mm-hmm. The organization also has a roll-up Energy Efficiency Alliance, so there's some work going on in New Jersey. But since we're here in Pennsylvania, let's focus on that. We think that there's plenty more opportunity and that there is proven improvement. And we did talk briefly about Reggie at the top of this call and this podcast, Grant. When that goes into action, that can become a longer term catalyst in addition to the many great programs that exist. And I want to be clear, right? If people are having trouble paying their bills or have a low income household, you should absolutely check out both your utility, your gas utility and electric utility websites, and Action Housing, which is the federal weatherization agency here in Allegheny County. There's parallel sets of resources that can both be applied to those single homes. The city, as you know, has a wonderful loan program for energy efficiency through the Urban Redevelopment Authority.
Yep.
And so, I think at a policy level, the other stuff, not residential, but commercial in Allegheny County, we now have a program available to commercial property owners called CPACE. So Property Assessed Clean Energy. And it's a terrific financing mechanism that really can help a commercial property owner to make significant energy efficiency improvements. And just like a homeowner, right? Those are often a huge chunk of fixed costs. And so it's a great way to skinny down. And in this terrible year that we have all been through, everybody's looking at how do I rethink making where I'm spending a lot of time, A, more comfortable, B, more healthy, and C, cut my expenses. And right. Energy efficiency steps line up right on top of that. And, I do want to say this, Grant, right? There's also a ton of jobs that associate with that. So you should be on the lookout next week for the annual energy efficiency jobs report that comes out from E2 and E for the Future. And I know that it has been the fastest growing segment of jobs in Pennsylvania for the past 4 or 5 years. It's pretty incredible. And yet we still, as a percentage, have fewer energy efficiency jobs than most of the rest of the country as a percentage of our overall employment. So that suggests that, you know, we've got plenty of need, as we've talked about, and plenty of opportunity, right? So the more we're able to drive that across the finish line and help residents get more comfort, lower bills, better efficiency, right? That 25% savings, I mean, that's huge.
It's huge. It's
absolutely huge. And it's not just about the money, right? You know, we can talk about carbon, we can talk about comfort, right? All the health impacts, the asthma, the moisture reduction that, you know, Rebecca was talking about. It's just a great way for us to make a difference. I know we're kind of at time, Grant. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on?
Yeah, just to touch on this, I mean, real quick, because it is about cash, right? Cash in your pocket. But like, Rebecca, you guys did focus groups with a lot of the contractors. I mean, what was the makeup of that? I mean, we're looking at like electricians, carpenters, like what are some of the professions that are involved in this work?
Yeah, I mean, we worked with, they were really Janine and CCI's contractors. So it was kind of a self-selected group of, you know, energy efficiency professionals. So, you know, the guys who will like crawl into your attic and do all of the hard work that they like to say. But one of the biggest issues is just that there aren't enough in that space. So it seemed, and Janine, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like from speaking to them, you know, they're kind of like a niche group. And there, it needs to trickle down more to just your average contractor and, you know, the friend space of, you know, people who help you out, you know, with some of your building projects.
Yeah. We definitely need more of them. Yeah. And that's where policy makes a difference. And if you're going to take the time to do a project, and even if it's going to open the layers of the onion, Grant, like it did in your house, you've added so much value to your house and you've eliminated the number one risk for electrical fires in a home is poor wiring.
Yep.
So, you know, it's a safety thing for you and your family. Those are big deals. So I think it's great. It's just great.
Excellent. So one of the things we'd like to do just to kind of wrap up, Janine, this has been really great information. We appreciate it. So we have a little piece. Self-fulfilling kind of information gathering for us called what you're listening to, what you're reading, or what you're watching. So Rebecca and I are just curious to see what our guests are consuming from a day-to-day basis, just to add to our list of consumption. So any good books or movies or podcasts that you're listening to out there?
I am reading a book, but the title is eluding me. I think it's called A Stranger in the Woods, about a guy who's like a hermit in Maine. It's a true story, and he lived out there for over 20 years. So in this time of COVID,
it's kind of
crazy, and he just walked off one day when he was 20 years old. And I've been watching Away, the new Netflix series with Hilary Swank, which I've been very much enjoying.
Awesome. That's terrific. Anything new on your list there, Rebecca?
Not so much, but I just read a really fascinating article out of NPR. Maybe this sets up like a future podcast, but it's around the recycling industry, and it compares the recycling industry, which was actually an advertising ploy of the plastics and oil and gas industry, like throughout the 80s and 90s, when they made that switch, and they were really pushing recycling. But it basically mirrors like the cigarette industry. I forget the name of the movie, but thank you for not smoking.
Cynical.
Yeah. Super interesting. Not that recycling is, you know, not like we should still be doing it, but plastic specifically.
There was some ulterior motives behind it. Is that
Yeah, it's
interesting. That never happens. No.
I think that tees up a future episode for us.
It does.
So, thank you so much for having me here. And please check out the new ACEEE report. And we'll keep you posted on what happens with Kia.
Awesome. Once the report kind of is dropped there, like, please pass it on, and we're happy to share it with folks. So this is great. Well, Janine, we thank you for joining us. Rebecca, thank you as always. Thanks everyone for listening in. This is the Grant Street Experience. I hope you guys have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care. Thank you.